Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. My name's Erin and I'm a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, birth activist and all-round birth geek. In this podcast, I chat to experts in the field of pregnancy and birth, debunking myths around birth, diving into the research around maternity care and exploring what is it that means you're more likely to have a positive birthing experience. If you enjoy this podcast, do feel free to buy me a coffee and fund my caffeine habit. Link to my Buy Me a Coffee page is in the podcast info. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. I know I say every episode I say I'm very excited to speak to my guests, but I genuinely am very, very, very excited this week because I'm talking to Tony Harmon about the microbiome. And one of the reasons I'm so excited is because this is something that I'm really, really passionate about. And Tony, I haven't spoken to you about, you know, how I came across you and why I think this is so important. And I'll get to that in a minute. But I am very, very excited to get this information out there because I think it's really important. Before we do launch into our chat, do you want to just introduce yourself and say who you are and what you do?
Well, thank you so much for having me as a guest on your podcast. I'm super excited and I'm always really excited about sharing the wonders of the microbiome. So thank you for having me as a guest. So I'm Tony Harmon. I'm a filmmaker. I'm a course creator. And I've discovered a passion about microscopic organisms that I never... and I just love it. And the deeper you dive into the science, the more exciting and wondrous it is. So I can't wait to share.
Oh, thank you. I do think it's a really important thing to cover. And I've wanted to record this episode for a while. From a personal perspective, I know that the importance of the microbiome after having done what quite a lot of parents probably do of their first births and doing no prep, not really understanding, you know, any of my options because I didn't know I had any. And then having a cascade of medical intervention, drugs, antibiotics, and then ending up with a child who had severe silent reflux, awful allergies, which she still suffers from, eczema and asthma. So, I mean, we'll come on to, you know, how that happens and why that happens, because you'll be very aware of that. But before we do kind of dive into the implications of birth preferences and the microbiome, do you want to explain what the microbiome is and why are you so passionate about it? Why did you get into kind of this kind of research?
It's a little bit of a long story in the sense that so I'm a filmmaker and I was doing documentaries and then we've just made our first feature film. And we just sold it to a Hollywood company. So I thought I was on the way to Hollywood. And then I found out I was pregnant, which was amazing, fantastic. And so as a filmmaker, the number one thing you do is you prepare, right? So I was obsessively preparing. So I took two different antenatal classes and I took a separate breastfeeding class because I wanted to be like fully prepared and to kind of be fully informed. And I thought I was fully informed. And then on my birth preferences, really simple. I wanted a home birth and I wanted to exclusively breastfeed. So not complex. And in the end, as sometimes happens, I ended up with an emergency C-section. I had no support for skin to skin, no support for breastfeeding. I really struggled to establish breastfeeding. I ended up, I hate this expression, but topping up with formula. And I just found the whole transition into motherhood just didn't go to plan. And so as a filmmaker and a documentary filmmaker, I was really curious about what happened. And so I started at the beginning, which is just, I went to my friends at my antenatal group and just started making a film about our birth experiences. Really, really simple. And then at the premiere of that, a doula came up to me and said, "You should make a film about doulas." And I didn't even know what doula was. I just had no idea. My preparation was very much in the, let's call it the medical side of birth. And I didn't realize there's a whole other world. And the fact you had preferences really didn't really occur to me. So then I made a film about doulas called Doula. And at the premiere of that, another doula came up to me and said, if you really want to know what's going on in the birth world, you should make a film about the kind of politics of birth. So I did. I kind of delved deep, and we made a film called Freedom for Birth about the right to choose how, where, and with whom you give birth. And that was a real eye opener, really, just in terms of that parents have rights and parents have decisions, and they are in control of their birth. Because when I was pregnant, I thought I was in control of my birth, but actually decisions were made about my birth that didn't involve me, and it still kind of gets me cross even now. At the premiere of that of that film, Freedom for Birth, and we had 1,000 screenings all around the world, and all happening on the same day, and it was great. We had a kind of a really great reaction to it. And the premiere of that, one of the premieres, someone said, there's some really interesting stuff happening around the science. Have a look into it. So I came across a paper by a scientist called Rodney Dietert, and it was called The Completed Self. And it was published in a really obscure physics journal, actually. And but it completely transformed the way I view birth. So your question, what is the microbiome? So the microbiome, so I'm looking at you. So this is on Zoom, but I'm looking at you and I'm seeing you as a human. And I see myself as a human. But actually, I have trillions of human cells, but I also have trillions of microorganisms living on and in me. And the community of microorganisms living on and in me, they include bacteria, viruses, fungi, archaea, and other microscopic organisms. That community that live on and in me is called the human microbiome. So the microbiome describes the community of microorganisms that live in a host. I'm a host. So now I understand that as a human, we are part human cells, part microbe. And microbes are fantastic because they help with digestion, they help with metabolism, they help keep us healthy. There's a gut-brain connection. So what happens in your gut can impact the workings of your brain. And the most important time for establishing your microbiome is during birth. And this is what the paper which I read by Rodney Dietert, he basically said, what we're doing around birth, we're getting it wrong. And actually, we need to have the right microbes present in the very early days to establish your microbiome, to optimally train your immune system. And if you miss the window for this optimal immune training, then your child is at higher risk of things like allergies and asthma, diabetes, even obesity. So my daughter has asthma, and I link it to the emergency C-section. I mean, at the moment there's no causality. So this is like scientists, any scientist listening to this will understand that there's a difference between causality and a connection to. So right now, there's strong evidence that there's a really strong connection between how you're born and how you're fed in those early days, weeks, months of life, and your health. So causality, so this is like whether it causes it, that's still to be proven. That might take decades to be proven, because it's very hard to experiment on pregnant people and birthing people. So that's it in a nutshell, really. So what happens during the birth process establishes the baby's microbiome, and that establishes that baby's path towards health or potentially disease.
I find it terrifying, quite frankly, because we, I mean, as a birth worker, I know how medicalized birth is, and that's the norm now. And the amount of babies and eventually adults that are impacted by their births and the things that happen and the way that that affects their microbiome and their long-term health, I think is really scary, which is why I'm so passionate about getting this episode out and you know, helping your message get out there, because it really does have an impact. And from a personal perspective, you know, it's not just my child's health that was affected by I don't want to say the preferences because they weren't preferences. I didn't have any. It's things that were chosen for me and done to me. So, when I think about the things that happened in her birth, yes, it affected her health and it affected, short term and long term, but it affected so much wider than that as well. My relationship, my bonding with her, my own mental health, there is such a wider piece than just looking at the health of the child. So do you, when we think about the preferences or lack of, what kind of things are we talking about that are going to be really important for helping seed that microbiome at birth? What are the things that people should be aware of and should potentially be asking for?
Great question. Okay, so I'll just explain the science of what happens over birth, and then I'll go through kind of what you can do. So during pregnancy, your the mother's microbiome, so the mother's vaginal microbiome and a gut microbiome changes in preparation for birth. So you've got these trillions of microorganisms living in your vagina and in your gut, and they start changing, the population changes in preparation for the birth process. And then as soon as your waters break, so if you imagine the baby is growing up inside the sort of inside the womb, inside the amniotic sac, and is mostly protected by the world of microbes, by the amniotic membranes. And then, as soon as the waters break, that's the moment when the amniotic sac ruptures. And so, suddenly, the baby starts being exposed to the world of microbes, the world in which we all live. Around us every day are trillions of microbes all around us. That's the world we live. This is the microbial world, so to speak. So, as the baby passes through the birth canal, the baby acquires vaginal microbes. And then, as the baby comes out, and this is great because hopefully there'll be a lot of poo around, the mum's poo, because as the baby comes out, the baby will probably get a good lick of the mum's bum, and that's fantastic. And will be exposed to the mum's poo, and that is brilliant because that's the mum's gut microbes that get transferred to the baby. So the mum's vaginal microbes, the mum's gut microbes, and if the baby's placed skin to skin, the mum's skin microbes all go into the baby, and then that starts founding the infant microbiome. So the baby's microbiome in those first few days and weeks, actually, the kind of the whole process takes over. And then this is the magic part. So within breast milk, you have these special sugars. The third most abundant component of breast milk are these special sugars called HMO sugars. And they don't feed the baby. They feed the microbes transferred from the mum during the birth process. They feed the beneficial microbes that come from mum that establish the baby's microbiome. They're the ones fed by these special sugars in breast milk. And this helps the population of beneficial microbes to populate the infant gut. And they're the right ones to optimally train the infant immune system. Right. So that's the science. So what can you do? So you kind of want the mum to optimize her microbiome during pregnancy. And there's things you can do. So things like eating a diverse range of fruit and vegetables during pregnancy. So to optimize the maternal microbiome, it's called. So it's a fresh fruit and vegetables, high fiber, because that's the kind of that helps you give the fibers, which are food for the gut microbes in the mum's gut. There's also things like opening windows, go for walks in nature. Getting a dog is really good for the microbiome. So all these things help optimize the mum's microbiome during pregnancy. And then during the birth process, and birth doesn't always go to plan. And as much as you make a plan, it doesn't always go to plan. But if the mum can be supported to have skin to skin as soon as possible after birth, and for as few people to touch the baby as possible, if possible. Obviously, if there's an emergency situation, this all goes out the window. But if everything is okay, then the baby to be placed on the skin to skin as soon as possible, because that all does loads of things. It helps regulate the baby's heart rate, the temperature, regulate the blood sugars in the baby. It kind of like it helps the baby transition from life in the womb to life outside the womb. But it also, the baby acquires those microbes. And if you've had a I mean, I've filmed loads of different births, and birth is messy, and brilliant that it's messy. It's fantastic. But I kind of see videos where the midwives or the nurses wipe away all the kind of poo and all the muck. And actually, you want it to be messy, because when your baby's put onto the skin to skin, you kind of want all that smorgasbord of microbes from, you know, vaginal juices and poo and everything else. You want that on the mother's chest for the baby to keep acquiring those microbes. And then ideally you'd want support for exclusive breastfeeding if at all possible. And sometimes exclusive breastfeeding is difficult. So for the mum to be supported with hand expressing colostrum if she can, just as much colostrum and as much exclusive breast milk if possible. And sometimes it is impossible, but it's just that support for exclusive breastfeeding. So even if you have a C-section, having skin to skin and support for breastfeeding, that helps get those beneficial HMO sugars in the breast milk into the baby's gut, which feed those beneficial microbes in the baby's gut. And that all helps. So if a baby's born by C-section, they have an altered microbiome. They have a different microbiome to a baby born vaginally. But if you exclusively breastfeed, if that baby only gets breast milk, then that sorts out the differences between being born vaginally and being born by cesarean. So that's the kind of the key messages, really. It's optimizing the maternal microbiome during pregnancy with diet and just like healthy, just getting exposed to nature, outside world. And then it's just skin to skin and exclusive breastfeeding.
Yeah.
And support for that, and seeking out support for that. Mm. So if you're pregnant right now, just have a chat with a lactation consultant or your local breastfeeding expert before you give birth. Kind of know what you can do to help establish breastfeeding as soon as possible.
Yeah. I think lots of people do, well, I say lots, not lots, but you know, some people do antenatal prep for their birth, but they don't plan for the postpartum period, and breastfeeding doesn't come naturally to everybody. It's a learned skill for both mother and baby. So yeah, I think it's a really important point to make that people should be, you know, looking up where they're going to get their support so that they have a better chance of succeeding with breastfeeding. And back to your point about C-sections, this is why I'm so passionate about people understanding that they have options and they have preferences they can ask for. Because, and like, to be quite frank, it pisses me off that they don't do this as standard in a C-section, because it's so easy to facilitate, and it is something they should be doing as standard, rather than taking that baby away from the mother immediately after birth in a C-section and wiping them all over and then doing their checks and bundling them up like a burrito and handing them back to the mother. And then there's no skin to skin then, because there's a massive blanket around the baby. You know, there isn't really any reason, unless there's an emergency, to put the baby straight from the abdomen onto the chest, put the blankets over both mother and baby, and then get that skin to skin, right?
Exactly right. It's one of my passions is to getting this information out, particularly for C-section mums. And it drives me mad where my baby was given to me like a burrito, wrapped up in a towel, wiped off about 45 minutes later, no skin to skin. And it's kind of, there's so much research about the benefits of skin to skin. If it is an emergency situation and the mum isn't available, then skin to skin with the dad. So the mum and the dad, or mum and significant other, they share a lot of the microbes from the home. So even if the mum isn't available, skin to skin with the dad can really, really help. So if the dad is in the operating theatre, it needs to be kind of education of the doctors and all the kind of different partners. And that's what we're trying to do. But it's kind of, okay, let's do skin to skin with the dad. Because all those things which I talked about, the kind of regulation of the heart and the temperature and the blood sugars, that can happen with dad too. And we just did the conference a couple of weeks ago, and we had these fantastic speakers talking about skin to skin. And one of the speakers was Niels Bergman, who's just amazing. So he's a neuroscientist. And he was talking about the wiring of the brain. And you have a really narrow window, just the first few hours, for that baby's brain to be rewired with skin to skin, and for the mum's brain to be rewired, and for the dad's brain to be rewired. So it's a complex process, because there's all sorts of bonding going on, there's all sorts of hormones, but it all helps if we can get skin to skin for all C-section parents and all C-section babies as soon as possible in the operating theatre. It's kind of not good enough. I don't think it's good enough for it to happen. I mean, sometimes it does need to happen much later, but just for these procedures to be in place, which are blocking that physiological norm, drives me mad too.
Yeah. And what about the effect of antibiotics? Because if you have a C-section, or say, for example, you have an infection, or they give you prophylactic kind of preventative antibiotics. So, give you an example, my second birth, I had a pre-labor rupture of membranes. They wanted to give me antibiotics. I refused because I was aware of the effect the antibiotics would have on my baby's microbiome and mine. And I had no signs of infection, which quite frankly really pissed them off. And they threw the dead baby card at me because I declined antibiotics. And I was like, well, I'm not having them. If I have an infection, I will take them, but otherwise I'm not. And again, it's about knowing that you can refuse stuff, right? And understanding that you have rights and you have choice. And I made an informed decision to decline those antibiotics. But what is the effect of the antibiotics? If as a mother, as a parent, if you take antibiotics, either because they're necessary or unnecessary, because sometimes they are unnecessary, how does that impact your microbiome and then the babies?
Another great question. Okay, so antibiotics are fantastic. So if there is an infection, fantastic that they're available. So I'm not against antibiotics. I think the so if you think about an antibiotic, what it does, it kills bacteria. That's the idea of antibiotics. They kill the bacteria to take away the risk of infection. And so in some instances, they are really necessary. So things like for group B strep, if a mum has a group B strep, then so group B strep appears is like a normal microbe that appears in, I think it's between 10 and 40% of mums have group B strep in their body. And that's just how we live every day. And most of the time it doesn't cause infection. But if a group B strep mum gives birth to a baby, that baby may acquire group B strep from the mum, and it, because the baby's microbiome is so delicate in that instant, it might become colonized by group B strep, and in rare occasions it can lead to an infection. So having antibiotics can prevent that. However, antibiotics kill, there's like a nuclear bomb going off inside your microbiome. So it kills off not just all your bad bacteria, your pathogens, but also kills off your good bacteria. So there's some really strong research for, say, for C-section, for the mother to, so antibiotics are often given to mums for C-section to prevent the mum having an infection, because it's a major abdominal surgery, so they want to prevent infections. But there's some research which says that if the antibiotics are given to the mum after the cord is cut, then that will help preserve the baby's microbiome. So you've got the baby not being exposed to antibiotics directly. Because if the mum's given antibiotics, that's going to be passed on to the baby. So there's still the effect of antibiotics on the mum after the birth, where you've got breastfeeding, because one of the, as well as HMOs, you've got live bacteria in breast milk. So by having antibiotics, that can kill some of the live bacteria in breast milk. So it's having it's knowing the risks and the benefits, and having kind of honest discussions with your doctor, and to be informed. I think I mean, the what's fantastic now is that there are so many resources available to parents and for parents to become fully informed themselves to understand the risks and the benefits. And I wouldn't say for parents to flat out refuse antibiotics, because sometimes if there is an infection, they are fantastic. So if a so going back to the Group B strep example, if a mum chooses not to have antibiotics, then and is Group B strep positive, then that baby has to be really closely observed for the for early onset Group B strep infection, which can take place over the first 7 days. So you've got to be really, really careful with that. And any sign of infection, then it's like antibiotics. So I think it's just having a balanced approach to it, and to be grateful that antibiotics are there, but at the same time, I think there's more and more research about the impact of unnecessary antibiotics on the infant microbiome.
And I think another point to make with the Group B strep is it is a transient infection. And I think people may get tested quite early on in pregnancy and then told that they have to have antibiotics at birth. But it's worthwhile repeating that test closer to the end of pregnancy because you might not have it anymore. And then you're taking antibiotics unnecessarily. So, you know, again, it's knowing that you can do these things, isn't it? And knowing that you have choice. One more question. What's your view on vaginal seeding? Because this is something which people talk about quite a lot in terms of if having a C-section and babies missing that dose of bacteria, like you mentioned, as they come through the birth canal, they're born into a sterile environment because they're born surgically. So vaginal seeding is quite a controversial thing where you swab the vagina to get some of that bacteria, you wipe it on their baby so they don't miss out on that dose of bacteria. But what's your view on vaginal seeding?
I think it's an ongoing research project. Okay, so there's lots of different research happening all around the world, and and the research results are mixed. So the research protocols are really strict. So they are the it's only used for elective cesarean or cesarean by mother's request. This is the research protocols. Only mothers under 35, low risk mothers. So it's an ongoing research, and the preliminary results of the research suggest it could be beneficial in storing the vaginal bacteria to the baby. However, there's other research which says actually it's the gut mother's gut bacteria which is more important. So swabbing a baby with vaginal juices, let's call them that, is not going to be as effective as exposing the baby to poo. And there's some research, really interesting research, coming out of Finland at the moment, and they're taking this. I don't know how your listeners will think about this. This is they're taking a bit of the mum's poo and mixing it with a bit of breast milk to making a poo milkshake and giving that to the baby. And so that's again, this is all kind of part of clinical trials. It's not to be recommended, but that has really good results in terms of restoring the microbiome. So the vaginal seeding, it might help make a difference, but it's ongoing. And also, if you're one of the protocols is that the mother's microbiome is screened during pregnancy. So make sure there's no pathogens present, like Group B strep or any of the kind of like nasty bad bacteria you don't want to be given to your baby. So if a mum is well informed and had her microbiome screened during pregnancy and wants to do vaginal seeding and is fully informed, then that's up to them. But I'd look to this research from Finland and have a look at this poo milkshake idea. And it's not very palatable, the idea of it, but the science is really strong behind it. So I would say, yeah, be informed, have a look at all the research that's happening at the moment. There's a clinical trial. I've just interviewed the scientists leading the clinical trial who are recruiting. It's a large clinical trial with 600 mums being recruited. So the full results of that trial won't be known for maybe a couple of years. So it's difficult to fully recommend it because it's not accepted anywhere and not recommended procedure anywhere, just because it's still the full results of the clinical trials are not known.
It's I think your poo point is quite an interesting one, because I think it's something that lots of people are so worried about, pooing during labor. But I always tell people, A, you won't even know, because it'll just get whipped away and you won't even realize that you've done it. I've got no idea if I pooed three of my births, and my husband's never told me. But it's not a bad thing, because our microbiome lives in our guts. You want to put, like you said, you want to pass that bacteria to your baby. That's why they come out so close to your bum.
But it's just like what you said. I mean, just the midwife wiping away your poo. Actually, you don't want that. You want the birth to be messy, and you want the baby to be exposed to your gut microbes. And I know it's not very palatable to hear, but actually, that's all part of the physiology of birth. And like you say, the bum and the vagina are very close together, and there's a reason for that.
I find it mind-blowing how all these tiny little things, which seem really innocuous and are done as standard, are impacting our births and the health of our children. I think people need to do the research, and they need to understand this stuff, because just simply going into hospital and birthing in that environment where you're more likely to experience medical intervention, you're more likely to experience drugs and antibiotics, can potentially have a lasting impact on your baby. So thank you so much for coming on and talking about the microbiome. I didn't say how I found you, actually, but when I've been doing birth work for about, I can't remember now, three, it's either 3 or 4 years, I can't remember. But very, very early on, when I first qualified, your book was one of the first things that I read. Probably because I had a vested interest in it because of my experiences, and it blows my mind. And it's something that I talk about with all of my clients when we're talking about birth preferences, because it is so important. So thank you for all the amazing work that you do, because it is really, really important work. If anybody wants to read more, or they want to do one of your courses, where can they find all of your information?
If you go to, so our film, so we made a film called Microbirth. So go to microbirth.com, and on microbirth.com, you'll find our links to our book and links to our courses. We've got a new film coming out later this year, which is aimed at parents. So Microbirth was mostly aimed at birth professionals, but we've got a new film all about this stuff and the what you can do. That's the thing. So Microbirth sets up the problem, but then this next film is what you can do. And it's just this. If that would be my take-home message, would be, yeah, to be fully informed, but just to, yeah, skin to skin and breastfeeding and support for that. So yeah, look out for our new film coming out later this year. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to just talk about my passion and for sharing it. And yes, I think it's I've got this theory. So things will change in terms of the medical system, and it will change if there's parent demand for change.
Yes.
And I think it's empowering parents with this knowledge so that their expectation and their questions they ask their doctors change. So we're developing this program at the moment to give this information to parents in a way they can accept this information and make choices and be empowered in their choices. But at the same time, we're helping to educate the maternity systems to be ready for the parent demand. So
Yeah.
we're creating the parent demand, but at the same time, we're supporting the system to meet that demand. And I think that's when we're going to hit a tipping point where this information just becomes normal because everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
So that's probably not going to happen this year or maybe not even next year. But within 5 years, I can see parents talking to their doctors about the microbiome and about their choices inspired by this knowledge.
I think what you're doing is what Amanda Burley did for cord clamping. I mean, she was ridiculed And pushed out of her profession for trying to get people to understand that optimal cord clamping was so important. And now it is, it's pretty standard, and nobody bats really. I mean, there are still a few people that kind of don't respect wishes, but most healthcare workers, most midwives and doctors understand the benefits of optimal cord clamping, and most do it as standard. And I think what you're doing is the same. You're educating, the maternity system and the parents to understand the importance of skin to skin and the microbiome. And like you say, hopefully in 5 years' time, it will be standard. And people won't have to proactively ask for it because it will be done at, as standard as normal. So fingers crossed. And this will help, this will help. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me on as a guest, and thank you for sharing the microbial love.
The Better Birth podcast and all of its content is for educational and informational purposes only. You should consult your midwife or your doctor for anything in relation to your own pregnancy and birth. The opinions and the views of the guests on the Better Birth podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Better Birth or Erin Fung.